The World Was Built for Two by Chibi RHM. Read by Nitracer. Fandom Hockey RPF The Pittsburgh Penguins, pairing Sid Gino. Rating explicit. No archive warnings apply. Additional tags for Soulbond. In the history of the world, no one has done a thing that was not done for love. You must only train yourself to see it. Canny emerald strain that connects his soul to his desire, and all the links and snarls in it that might seem as though they tend towards wealth or power, but mean only love me back, love me despite everything. Cat Valente, The Habitation of the Blessed. The first time Sid meets Gino, he isn't Gino, he is Yevgeny Malkin, and he's the enemy. Sid is so pumped up for the game, he barely notices him. He doesn't notice anything except hockey. And Malkin's good, but that's all he is. He feels a tinge of sadness when Canada wins, but he guesses he just feels bad. Ovechkin's not the only one crying. And Sid isn't so unfeeling, he doesn't have some sympathy for how it must suck to lose. He also gets a headache when he flies back home. But he's just really overtired is all. He doesn't think anything of it. The second time Sid meets Yevgeny Malkin, it takes a while. First, there are whispers around Mario's house about leaving Finland, and broken contracts, training camps in LA. Malkin coming is like a storm. Sid can feel building in his bones. He can hear Mario's hushed conversations, read the worry and excitement writ large on his face. And he swears he can feel it when Malkin flies in and the storm finally breaks. When he shakes Malkin's hand, he definitely feels something. An electric frisson, a sort of understanding, like, yeah, Sid's the kind of guy who would fly halfway around the world just to play hockey too. He thinks Malkin might feel the same sense of kinship because he smiles. And his smile is almost as goofy as Sid's laugh. It transforms his face from dour and hound dog-like to childish and gleeful. And something about it makes Sid's heart give a happy little leap. I like this guy, he thinks. And he could swear Malkin is thinking the same thing. Malkin, Gino, now he goes by Gino, doesn't speak English. He trails after Gonch like his constant shadow. And he only leaves Gonch's side for Max and Sid. Max is friendly and effortlessly cool. So Sid gets why Gino follows Max. But Sid can't figure out why Gino follows him. He chalks it up, in the end, to being the only one who seems able to communicate with Gino, besides Gonch. He doesn't get why he's the only one who can do that, either. Gino is a pretty clear communicator. His face is so expressive and his body language so obvious. It's like, Gino doesn't even need words to talk. Gonch seems slightly confused by how easily Sid and Gino click. If he were anyone else, Sid might even say it worried him, but Gonch doesn't do worried. Instead, he's watchful when Sid hands a pudding cup to Gino on the plane. Like Gino staring hadn't made it obvious he wanted one. Or diagrams plays in a way Gino can understand. He doesn't think it's weird until Terrain corners him one day after practice and says, You diagram plays for Gino, like it's news. Yes, Sid asks, because Gino had been confused by the odd man rushes, so of course he'd explained. Gino understands more English than he lets on, so long as it's spoken slowly, and lots of hand gestures are used. Everyone else treats him like he's dumb, Sid thinks. Gino said something odd when I asked him why, Theron goes on. He says when you explain, he can picture what to do. Maybe I'm good at explaining? Sid tries weakly. He doesn't know how Gino's brain works. He feels distinctly now, like he's been brought to the principal's office and gotten in trouble for doing his job well. Terrin shakes his head. I made an appointment for you and Gino, he says, as soon as you get dressed. I want you to go up to the UPMC. He hands over a card to Sid, that Sid takes gingerly. Dr. Jenna Whitley, M.D., Bond Specialist, it reads. and then lists an office number. Gino will meet you there. Bond specialist? Sid asks incredulously. No, I'd know if I was bonded to Gino, wouldn't I? You want to take the chance because I don't. It's not a request, Sid. So Sid showers as quickly as he can and drives to UPMC. Gino's in the waiting room when he gets there, sitting next to Gonch and looking bored, while Gonch flips through a National Geographic. He starts a little when Sid walks in and waves, but before Sid can wave back, a small black woman opens the door. Sydney? Evgeny? She asks, glancing down at her clipboard. I'm Dr. Whitley, if you could follow me. Dr. Whitley separates Sid from Gonch and Gino, putting him in what looks like a bland doctor's office. There's no equipment, just a bed and a small desk. The first few minutes she spends with Gonch and Gino, and then comes into Sid's room and smiles an apology. I just had to explain to Sergey and Gino, what was going to happen, she says, sitting down at the desk. Now, I'd like to hear from you. Gino says he's experienced no Bond symptoms since coming to America. We met before that, Sid says, at Worlds and Juniors. I didn't feel anything then either. Dr. Whitley makes a humming noise and jots something down before she gets up and dims the lights. All right, Sydney, she says in a gentle voice. I want you to close your eyes and concentrate. Can you tell me what Gino is thinking about right now? Hockey, Sid suggests after a few moments, and she gives him an unimpressed look when he cracks one eye open. Take a deep breath, she instructs, and pay attention to Gino, as if he were in the room talking to you. Sid closes his eyes and tries, but all he can think is, this is stupid, until he realizes that the thought doesn't feel like his own, and also, he's hungry? But he just ate in the car on the way over, and he's not much of a fan of apples, so why does he want one so badly? He doesn't understand what's going on, Sid says. His voice sounds distant, dreamy. He thinks this is dumb. He wants an apple. Oh, he can feel me. That's cool, especially since it makes Gino so happy. He immediately starts thinking a million things at Sid in Russian, and Sid doesn't understand the words, but he understands the blooming green and gold excitement, like leaves unfurling in the sun. Sid, Dr. Whitley says, just smiling. This is so cool, Sid breathes. He's down the hall, but he's right here. He's telling me everything. Knew you special, Sid, Gino thinks. Knew you understand. The next thing Dr. Whitley does is bring Gino in the room with Sid to discuss Bond ethics. A soul bond, she explains, is like sharing a house. If you need privacy, all you need to do is imagine yourself going to a room alone and shutting the door. Remember, the voice turns serious and luxury. A soul bond does not mean that you don't have a right to the privacy of your own thoughts. Sid doubts that will be a problem, since Gino's thoughts, now that he's tuned into them, seem to mostly be in Russian anyway. Now that Sid's aware Gino's there, he can hear the distant hum of his thoughts. But he has to concentrate to hear the actual sounds and feelings that come with it. It's more like having a radio in his head, always stuck between stations and a low volume. If it was in English, maybe he'd have noticed before. But as is, it's like white noise more than anything else. Now, Dr. Whitley takes out a folder and reads over the papers. I had Gino hooked up to a Bond strength monitor during the initial connection, and that puts your Bond at a level 3. Level 3? Sid asks, while Gaunt translates for Gino. But that's... Wouldn't I have noticed level 3 Bond? He expects Gino to share his panic, to feel something kick in soon. But Gino's projecting emotions too mild and varied for Sid to pick apart. Not if you weren't looking for it. And your working relationship was so new. No, Dr. Whitley says. I expect, once Gino started speaking English, you would have noticed. But a level 3 is high, Sid says. There haven't been hockey players who were level 3 for like 20 years. Well, Dr. Whitley smiles. You were always exceptional. Once it's pointed out to Sid, he honestly feels a little stupid for not noticing the bond before. He should have known. He doesn't normally get people the way he gets Gino. But he isn't sure what he wants to do about it. It just seems so random, so strange, that he'd be bonded with Gino, of all people. And Sid can't think of a single reason why. He always thought soul bonding was supposed to feel more special, more like cymbals crashing and choirs of angels singing. But it feels mostly like he's in a three-way bond between him, Gino, and Hockey. Gino doesn't act like anything's changed between them, and so neither does Sid. They don't even change to room with each other, because that'd be redundant. They basically can be in the same room in their heads at any time they want. It's mostly like finding a really good friend, and not having to go through an awkward period of explaining himself or what he's about to them. Gino gets it. Sid thinks even if they weren't bonded, Gino would probably get it. Hockey's what's most important to both of them. If there is some sort of cosmic point to the bond, Sid's pretty sure it has something to do with Hockey, because all of a sudden they're winning with Gino around. The kind of winning that makes the playoffs seem like they're maybe not such a pipe dream after all, even if it is early in the season. The press love them. Level 1s are common in team sports, but level 3s are rare and exciting. They're the next Hal Lindsay. The next Yasemin Shanahan. And everyone wants a piece of them. A million articles are written about what this means, what to expect, what he and Gino are going to do. Sid just tells them Hockey over and over again. It's a hockey bond. Hockey is what they're meant for. Hockey is what they do. What do you think having this bond means? Some new Sports Illustrated reporter, Sid didn't catch the name of, asks, during one of the few press conferences he and Gino do together. And Gino sends him a clear thought that makes Sid laugh. He says it's good luck, he explains to the sea of confused faces. We're the third level threes, so we'll win 3 Stanley Cups 3 times. And what do you think? The reporter asks avidly, and Sid lets his grin turn sharp. I say, why stop at 3? He can feel Gino approve as the flash bulbs all go off at once. Sid almost always keeps his end of the bond closed, and Gino almost always leaves the connection open. Either to make a point, or out of sheer absent-mindedness, Sid doesn't know. He gets used to it, though. The constant white noise in the back of his head, and in a way, it soothes him. Gino's thoughts are mostly in ration, just nonsense and colour feelings to Sid, unless Gino's thinking out a specific message, which comes across like garbled English. The only times Gino ever shuts Sid out completely is when he's angry, when they lose, or has a fight with his girlfriend, or at least that's who Sid assumes the blonde woman who appears sometimes in red clouds of lust, affection, frustration, is. Then the connection shuts off like a door being slammed. Gino's anger is never outward except in games. It always goes inward, and everything about him turns deadly and silent and terrifying. Sid tried once to nudge at it, hesitantly, and what he got back was a flaming orange rage, brighter than he'd ever felt anything from Gino, and a sense of shouted, "No!" He never bothers Gino when he's sulking again. They're not the best on ice together. It's not that they suck, but they definitely get in each other's heads too much. They both want the puck too badly. When Sid is on ice with Gino, and Gino's open, he knows because it's like Gino's screaming in his ear to pass, pass, pass. And Sid does without a second thought. Can you two try not passing to each other? Theron snaps during practice one day, and Sid feels a surge of protective anger flare up as Gino wilts. No, he says steely enough that everyone else goes dead silent. We can't. Theron holds Sid's gaze for a second before nodding and changing up the lines. What kind of soul bonds are you, eh? Colby asks, whacking Sid's ass with a stick. Fucking useless. Sid just smiles and resolves to work on it. He's never been bad at anything he put his mind to, and he isn't going to start now. Sid's first major injury comes in the form of a high ankle sprain from crashing skates first into the boards, which sucks. But sucks marginally less because Flowers out with the same thing, which means he won't be the only athlete whining at the doctors and begging to come back as soon as possible. It also means he has a buddy to watch games with, which means he has someone sitting next to him, noticing, as Gino turns into a completely different player. Not that he wasn't good before, but with Sid out, he's better somehow, and his numbers are insane. What's up with G? Flower asks, awed, as Gino racks up another assist. I think I'm doing that, Sid says. It's hard to think much around the overwhelming rush of feeling coming off of Gino. The mentally shouted, Look, Sid! Look what we do for you! He feels like he's part of the game. Like he's not even in the press box, but living every shift, every pass through Gino. I think it's a bond thing. Flower frowns. That's not illegal. No, Sid says. That much he's sure of. He's read every rule on bonding there is. I'd be on bond repressors if it was, wouldn't I? Flower makes a non-committal noise, and Sid doesn't bother to explain that it's not what Flower thinks. He's not making Gino do anything, any more than Terrain makes them do something by telling them to. Gino's just listening to Sid, relishing in having Sid there with him, in having Sid's focus and extra attention on him. And there's nothing wrong with that. Sid would do it every game if he could, and still concentrate on his own hockey. Because Gino's playing with every ounce of potential Sid's ever seen or felt in him. And so, while he's out, this is something Sid can give. A way to contribute without hurting his ankle at all. While he's out, Sid makes his yearly checkup with Dr. Whitley, who has him fill out a questionnaire on how the first year of bond has gone, and then reads it over with a mildly surprised expression. You keep the connection close an unusual amount, Dr. Whitley says, thumbing through his questionnaire. Is it causing you pain or impacting your play? No, Sid says. I keep it open when we're playing. Dr. Whitley arches an eyebrow, clearly indicating he should explain himself. There's no point getting too used to it, is there? Gino's only around part of the year, and he'll move back to Russia when hockey is over. No point getting attached to something that'll go away. Bonds never really go away, Dr. Whitley says. The broken bond is a myth. No matter how long you and Gino are apart, or how much you fight... I know that, Sid says, but you can come pretty close. They could shut the bond out, like Lindsay and Hal did, or move out of range, like Yasmin and Shanahan. Nothing's forever, not even a bond. So you fear losing a valued sense of intimacy, Dr. Whitley says, and Sid winces, hating how probing and clinical that sounds. I'm just doing what's practical, he says. But Dr. Whitley only hums and moves on. The worst part about Colby leaving is that everyone says it's for Sid. They need a new winger, people say, a talented winger, so Sid can play up to his potential. Which, yeah, Sid would like. And Marian Hossa seems like a great guy, but he never imagined it would cost him his best friend. Sid knows people leave. But he let himself believe that Colby wouldn't leave him because he was Sid's best friend and Colby was special. And Colby was good. And so, surely Mario and Ray would have no reason to trade him when he knew how important Colby was, not just to Sid, but to everyone. Sid had thought, foolishly, that maybe Colby would never leave, that he would settle down and stay in Pittsburgh forever. But everyone leaves Sid, so Colby leaves too. He packs up his locker and Sid lets himself be hugged one last time. It's okay, kid, Colby says, even though it's not. And Sid spends a lot of time sitting in Colby's stall while he says goodbye to everyone else, thinking about how nothing feels like it's going to be okay again.
Sid, okay?
Gino asks, and Sid starts. He hadn't even realized Gino was there, or that anyone was still there. He's probably leaking misery everywhere, and Gino could feel it. I'm fine, he lies, because he will be fine. Eventually.
Want me to stay with? Gino asks.
And Sid shakes his head. There's no use. It feels nice to have Gino close, but that's not a feeling he can rely on. One day, like Colby, Gino will leave. He's too good. He can't possibly want to play in Sid's shadow for forever. And besides, everyone leaves. Sometimes, Gino dreams about the year he stayed behind in Magnitogorsk. He never talks about it, or about Russia at all, and Sid tries not to ask too much about it. When he does, Gino's thoughts go teal and sad, proud, homesick, and it makes Sid ache for a place he'd never been. But when Gino dreams, Sid dreams too. They're never together in dreams, but sometimes he dreams about strange places or eats strange food or has strange feelings that he wakes up knowing came from Gino. Sometimes he wakes up hard and wanting, pointedly alone in his head. He and Gino avoid each other and try not to talk about what goes on those mornings they spend apart. When Gino has nightmares, though, they're all the same. Sid, Gino, is in an old, too large rink skating alone, and people yell at him in harsh voices. He tries to leave, and he's locked in. They take his equipment and yell, "Score! Score!" at him, and boo when he doesn't. Sometimes he's standing outside Mellon, and the doors won't open, and people around him watch and yell that he's a traitor, a coward, that he doesn't keep his promises. "Worthless!" they scream. Sid always wakes up from those alone, in the dark, sweaty and gasping for air. Sid doesn't talk to Gino about those dreams either. He wants to. He wants to ask how Gino could think those things about himself and still be so afraid when it's so obvious that Pittsburgh is where he belongs. He wants to know if Gino regrets coming over, and if that means he resents Sid and their bond. He wants to know what puts that miserable look on Gino's face after he gets calls from Russia some days, and why the dreams are extra bad after them. Sid doesn't ask, though. It's something Gino tries so hard to keep from Sid, and locks far away inside of him. Sid would never want Gino to ask about his secrets, about all the things he keeps to himself, even if none of it gives him nightmares the way Gino's secrets do. But a small, irrational part of him wishes Gino would just tell him one day, even though Sid hasn't done much to deserve that sort of trust at all. Foolishly, Sid had thought they'd had the cup in their grasp. They'd come so far and fought so hard, and he'd believed, even as the seconds ticked down and it became less and less likely. A childish part of him believed that something would happen, that fate would intervene and they would win. That was supposed to be the gamble of losing Colby. That Sid wouldn't have his best friend, but he'd have a cup. Except, he has nothing to show for the year, and it sucks. Gino's shut himself off to sulk, so Sid drives back to Mario's in silence. The first thing he does is shave. It doesn't make his reflection look any friendlier, or more like his own. But it hurts less to see the beard he couldn't quite grow, as a reminder of what he couldn't quite win. Sid is about to settle down and drown his sorrows in Chips Ahoy and the History Channel when he hears his front door open and someone let themselves in. He isn't entirely surprised when Gino appears in the living room. No one else has a key besides Mario and Natalie, and they always knock first. The bond is still mostly closed, but little tendrils of miserable, lonely, needy are leaking through. "Hey," Sid says, and scooches over on the couch to make room. Gino accepts the seat silently, but doesn't take one of the offered cookies. There's a long silence while Sid crunches.
"Maybe my fault," Gino says eventually. "Maybe I should not shave mustache."
That makes Sid laugh, the first laugh anyone's been able to get out of him. It feels good.
"No, believe me," he says. "You should have kept your mustache shaved." "Sorry," Gino says. "I not know what to say, Sid."
"You don't have to say anything," Sid says. "I was going to watch TV."
"Can I stay?" Gino asks hesitantly.
"Of course," Sid says. And Gino slumps into the couch like a puppet whose strings have been cut.
"You good captain," he says,
while Sid roots for the remote. And Sid shrugs. "I could be better."
"Best."
Gino disagrees. And for the first time, Sid feels something leaking out that he can tangibly identify as love. Fierce, abiding love for Sid and the team all swelled up in one. And Sid wraps himself in that feeling like a blanket and holds on tight while he turns on the TV.
"You're fighting with Oxanimal," Sid observes. And Gino looks at him askance. It's a valid observation, though. Gino's been shutting out his thoughts more since he got back from Russia. Being hazy, orange, irritated and snappy more. And it's enough that even Sid, who tunes Gino out most of the time out of practicality, is starting to notice. Soon it will affect Gino's game if he's not careful.
"Yes," Gino says after a long pause.
"Why?" Gino flashes Sid his own face and then...
"Competition."
And Sid feels his cheeks heat up.
"That's not..."
He stutters, mortified and guilty. Like he made this happen by even contemplating what it would be like if Gino just leaned over and... He shuts the door on that thought.
"Yasmin and Shanahan were level 3, and they're both married," he points out instead.
He pictures lifting the cup 3 times, then 5 President's Trophies. "That's what we're for," he thinks, firmly, to both himself and Gino.
"That's what we do." "You here," Gino says. "She in Moscow."
"Maybe she should be here," Sid suggests. If she's going to stick around and he can't go anywhere, he figures he may as well meet her in person, not just in Gino's head.
"Maybe,"
Gino agrees. His brain is a jumble of too many emotions for Sid to sort out. He learns a week later that Gino and Oksana have broken up. "It's tough dating with a bond, huh?" is all he says to Gino, who shrugs. Sid doesn't push it. He can't read Gino's emotions and he doesn't know how he feels about neither of them dating. So, to be safe, he doesn't feel anything at all.
"I want you to set me up," Sid tells Flower. Max looks a little hurt. "You don't want me to set you up?"
"No," Sid says shortly, while Flower cackles. He knows the kinds of girls Max knows, and they're... well, they're just not his type.
"So,"
Flower settles down on the bed next to Sid, his grin huge and eager. Like he's been waiting his whole life for Sid to ask for help dating.
"What kind of girls do you want? Tall? Short?
Dark hair? Light hair?"
"I don't know," Sid says uncomfortably, picking at the duvet cover. "I don't think about that stuff."
"You gotta give me something, man."
"I just..." Sid blows out a frustrated breath. "I asked you because I want something like you and Vero have, you know? It's not about what she looks like, it's about if she's, you know, cool."
"He's out to steal your woman," Max says, and Sid throws one of the useless little pillows they always have in hotel rooms at Max's head.
"I asked him because he's actually good at having a relationship, unlike you."
"You want what Vero and I have," Flower repeats. Sid nods. He wants someone who is in step with him. Who he isn't always explaining himself or apologising to. He had a girlfriend the summer he was 16, and she never got why he was always training or how important hockey was. And now that Colby's gone, Flower's the only one close to his age who has that thing that Sid sees Mario and Natalie or his parents have.
That wordless synchronicity. Like two players on a line together.
Flower's the most likely to be able to help Sid find it for himself. He's ready, he thinks.
"You know we grew up together, right?"
Flower asks, and that's definitely a note of pity in his voice that Sid doesn't want to hear.
"Are you going to help or not?" he asks.
And Flower raises his hand defensively.
"Yeah, yeah, just saying. Don't expect a miracle."
The dates Flower and Vera set him up on are nice. Sid will give them that. The girls are all nice, good-looking, the kind Flower would nod at in a bar and go,
"Her?"
Hopefully, when he was trying to get Sid to loosen up and have a good time. But after every one, Sid says goodnight and feels no need to call them, even though the date went just fine, and in spite of Flower's hopeful questioning the next morning.
"What's wrong with this one?" Flower sighs after the third try, without even bothering to ask how it went.
"There's nothing wrong with any of them," Sid says, because Becky was pretty and smelled like fresh-cut strawberries. And Marie had a cute smile that made Sid smile back and was smart and accomplished,
and Casey was sporty and fun and had freckles all over, that Sid had idly thought about touching. But none of them had felt right either. He didn't feel comfortable around any of them. He felt unnatural and stiff, like he was doing PR or performing a ritual instead of going on a date. It was dumb, being set up anyway. He wasn't ever going to feel comfortable with people he didn't know. I think maybe being set up isn't for me.
You mean, you're going to choose girls for yourself? Flower asks, and Sid shrugs.
Probably not, he says. He wouldn't even know where to start. Flower just buries his head in his arms and groans.
How did you date? Sid asks Gino the next morning.
Flower's disappointment is still hanging in the air, leaving him feel like a failure, and Gino, he thinks, would know.
I mean, it's hard with the bond, isn't it?
Gino blinks at Sid owlishly over his oatmeal, then glances around the room. Everyone else is at their own tables, having their own conversations. The team tends to leave Sid and Gino alone at meals every so often, to afford them a little privacy to be bonded. Sid wouldn't have asked if it was a normal meal, where they were crowded in between Max and Tanja and Brisky. But Gino is still edgy, until he confirms to his own satisfaction that they are, in fact, being ignored by everyone else.
Yes, he says finally. It hard with Bond. Too hard. Why it not work?
Right, Sid sighs with relief. I thought it was just me. Gino flushes a little and shakes his head. He must be embarrassed too, with his own recent failure, Sid thinks.
You just get so used to having it be easy with one person, and then it's just really hard with everyone else.
Gino looks at him a little strangely.
Yeah, he says. It different.
I just don't think I have time for that, Sid says, grateful Gino's backing him up. You know, hooking up once in a while is fine, but I think when I'm ready to date someone, I should know, right?
That right, Gino says firmly. You wait until they're signed. You wait until you know.
As a rule, Sid isn't much of a fighter. He's done it twice before, and he doesn't totally suck. He can defend himself just fine, but he'd still rather leave the brawling to someone else. He's never fought in a fit of temper or to defend someone else. Not until they're playing Florida. And it's always fucking Florida. And Ballard hip-checks Gino so hard, he flips over backwards. For a heart-stopping second, Sid loses himself completely in Gino's fear and anger as he's thrown through the air. And the relief Gino feels to land cleanly on his ass isn't near enough to soothe his rage.
I find Sid.
Gino thinks at him, but Sid pushes him aside, skating up to Ballard and shouting, "The fuck you think you're doing?
You want to defend your boy? You gotta go!" Ballard shouts back.
"Then let's fucking go," Sid says, shitting his gloves. He gets his ass kicked pretty cleanly. Ballard's got tons more experience and a heck of an uppercut. But he still feels some grim satisfaction going down the tunnel to get his smarting hand attended to. Gino comes to visit Sid a few minutes later when the period is over. Thankfully, whole, and none the worse for wear.
"Thank you," Gino says, smiling,
in a way that makes Sid feel more pleased than any amount of stick-tapping ever did.
"You might, what called, knight in shiny armour."
"Shining armour," Sid corrects, wincing as the ice pack slips off his hand, but Gino retrieves it and holds it to Sid's knuckles, his hand warm around the cool, soothing ice.
"That's what I say," Gino insists, "but stupid, not mess up soft hands."
"He hit you," Sid says stubbornly, and then realises how that sounds.
"I mean, I don't know. He could have killed you.
And he just made you so mad, and he was right there. Whatever. Fuck him anyway." Gino laughs.
"You best, Sid," he says, knocking their knees together. "Or I return favour someday. Fight for you."
He doesn't let go of Sid's hands.
"Don't," Sid says shortly, but he can tell from Gino's crinkly smile
that Gino doesn't plan on listening. If it was anyone else, he'd be offended, because he can take perfectly good care of himself. But it's Gino, and Gino, of all people, knows that best. Even if he acts, sometimes, like he knows at least. The first time the Penguins almost won the cup, Sid had seen it coming. Not the losing part, but getting there had seemed like an inevitable, steady climb. He doesn't see actually winning the cup happen until it's happened. First, it seems impossible that they're going to get in the playoffs. Then it seems impossible to beat Philly and Washington and Carolina. Then they're facing Detroit. And it's like every nightmare Sid's had about going back to Shattuck and having to take a test he knows he's going to fail because he's failed it before.
We not lose again, Gino thinks with quiet surety as they stretch side by side,
silent and grim before the first Detroit game.
Not be scared.
I'm not scared, Sid thinks, even though he's silently terrified. Of course, Gino's not scared coming out of Carolina. Gino lets out a little huff that sounds like exertion. But Sid can tell it's exasperation, and switches to stretching out his other leg.
Not only you on ice, Gino thinks. Hockey team sport. Who care if you win cup? I win cup. Flower win cup. Long as we win cup. Play your game, Sid.
So Sid smiles and acts the optimistic captain, the calm eye of the storm, and he lets Gino feel everything he's calmly tucked away. Gino plays better for it. In the end, it's Max who wins it for them. Not that Sid remembers much, in retrospect, in the haze of painkillers after he snaps his ankle. The only thing that sticks out in his mind is Gino staring at him when he returns to the bench and thinking clearly,
I win this for you.
Then, everything in his memory zooms forward to Flower, making one last save and they've won. They've won. He's screaming and hugging everyone he can find, and Gino's mentally yelling,
See? See?
And he's lifting the cup, and Gino's lifting the Conn Smythe, and everything hurts and is perfect all at once. The other thing Sid remembers, besides everything and nothing, is the parade. He remembers Gino lifting the cup over his head this time, then turning to look at Sid as the crowd roars for both of them.
What I tell you.
Sid remembers, you know, thinking smugly.
This is what we force, Sid.
This is what we do. Sid thinks back automatically and knows in his bones that they're going to do this again. Sid's heard of bond repressors, but he never takes them until the Olympics, when the IOC mandates that he and Gino have to in order to play. It's an old bylaw, and even though Sid would never give any information to Gino, and Gino would never give any to Sid, they're both too competitive to dream of it. The innocuous-looking, white, oblong pills come in the mail a week before he arrives in Vancouver. He doesn't notice the effects too badly in Pittsburgh because Gino's still around all the time, and Sid keeps the bond closed so much anyway. It isn't until they get to Vancouver that Sid really feels it, the empty echoing in his head, like Gino's halfway around the world again, even though he's just in another part of Olympic Village. It's different than during the summer because Gino's supposed to be right there, but isn't, and it makes Sid miss him desperately. But he's determined not to be weird to make the first move, until Gino shows up after Team Canada practice. He sticks out like a sore thumb in his Team Russia tracksuit, but he's gloriously, solidly there, and Sid finds himself grinning a little stupidly.
Hey, he says, waving Gino over.
Hey,
Gino responds, and they stare at each other for a few minutes, both their hands stuffed awkwardly in their pockets.
So, these bond repressors suck,
Sid blurts out, and Gino looks relieved that Sid was the first to admit it.
Make me feel weird, Gino says. Miss you in head during games. Play better with you.
I miss you too, Sid says, because he's not feeling great either. Taze has been showing him up the entire time, and he knows it. Without Gino's warm, comforting weight anchoring him, he feels scattered and empty. He's nervous, too, because silence from Gino usually means anger, and the meds make sleep hard to come by. All he ever thinks about lying awake is how unfair it is that no one else has to go through this. Dunks and Seeds were chosen to play together because they're level ones, and Aginla's the only other guy who's bonded on the team, but he's bonded to his wife, so he's fine as far as the IOC is concerned.
You do fine, Gino says,
reaching out and squeezing Sid's arm. And the contact feels good because He's not used to Gino being there without feeling him too. They go out to dinner and, as if he can still read Sid's mind, Gino bumps elbows and knees with Sid the entire night. The only time Sid is ever glad for the repressors is when they eliminate Russia. He knows the Russian team had been playing like shit because Gino had told him how frustrated he was over dinner the other night. But Gino had also made him promise not to hold back, so Sid hadn't. The handshake line is awful, with Gino's miserable face at the end of it. And he feels just as sick as he did in juniors when he beat Gino. Sicker, maybe, because he knows what Gino's head feels like right now, and it isn't a pretty place for him to have to be alone. As soon as Sid gets back to the locker room, before he's even fully changed, he takes the repressors and flushes them viciously down the toilet. He doesn't need them anymore. Sid's still shaky against Slovakia, but he finds himself whistling tunelessly the morning before they play America. "The fuck's with you?" Teza asks. He's tense and miserable, and has been since he learned they were playing the US. But Sid doubts anyone but him, Dunks, and Siebes have noticed. "I feel good today," Sid says, lacing up his skates. Gino's finally back in his head, his line solid. He's about to play hockey. He feels great. The game's intense, tightly drawn, and with neither team giving an inch, it isn't until overtime, when Sid gets the pass off of Ginla, and he suddenly knows it's his. He can feel Gino from somewhere in the crowd in his head going, "Shoot, Sid! Shoot! Miller's shaky! Shoot!" And so he does, just taps it in, and he knows he's done it. He knows the millisecond before the crowd roars because Gino is yelling in his head because overwhelming, happy, proud is washing over him in waves of purple, blue, and gold, and he throws off his gloves and thinks, "Thank you," back, desperately. "That one, all Sid," Gino says, as clearly as if he were one of the people crushing Sid to the boards in an impossibly large tangle of Canadian limbs, and screaming. As happy as Sid is, he wishes, just a little, that Gino was there, because Gino deserves it as much as Sid does. But he knows better than to tell anyone that. So instead, he leaves the connection open, so Gino can feel like he won too. Sergei leaving the Pens isn't a surprise, not like Colby was. Sergei had warned Sid he was looking at other offers. So you know what Gino's moping about. "Thanks," Sid said, torn between relief to finally know the reason Gino's thoughts had taken a melancholy, steely blue cast, and annoyance that Gino hadn't thought to tell him why he was projecting in the first place. Gino just shrugs when Sid brings it up with him. "No big deal," he says. "People leave." And Sid has nothing to say to that because it's true. But for all that Gino puts on a brave front when Sergei signs with Ottawa, the blue-grey shade of his thoughts gets deeper and deeper until the day Sergei leaves. When Gino's sadness leaks so heavily that Sid can't help but drive over, desperate to do something. Gino isn't there when Sid arrives. He's seeing Sergei off at the airport. But Dixie greets him by dangling herself around his legs and shedding thoroughly on him before slinking away. Sid wanders into the kitchen and starts throwing together dinner because Gino's bound to be hungry when he gets back. And Sid feels awkward and at a loss for what else to do. Cooking soothes him. Between the rhythmic chopping and easy steps that always follow one after another, orderly, even when nothing else is. He almost misses when Gino does come in, so absorbed with the pasta sauce, but it takes it a moment to feel the difference between hearing him at a distance and having him nearby. Gino's watching him silently, expression unreadable and emotions in a confused swirl Sid can't pick apart completely. He's still sad, desperately sad. But he's happy Sid is there, and Sid relaxes, minutely, the moment he can feel the thin tendrils of Sid, pleasure, good.
"Didn't know you cook. You keep secrets from me,"
Gino teases after a long moment of silence, and Sid turns away with a blush. "It's just chicken and pasta," he says. "It doesn't... I can't fix anything. I can't..."
"Hey."
Gino puts his hand on Sid's, friendly and warm.
"Dinner, exactly what I need. Thank you."
Sid can feel sincerity radiating off of Gino, mixed in with warm, pink-gold affection a little like the way he used to feel, Gino feel, around Sergei's family. If you ever need company, I'm... you know... He clears his throat awkwardly. I mean, if you're not sick of me, I'm around to cook for you, or whatever. Gino squeezes his hand and smiles, the colouring of his thoughts turning more vibrant. And Sid lets himself feel like he's exactly what Gino needs. Once he gets concussed, Sid finds himself needing Gino more, not just wanting him around occasionally, and not in the way he feels a little sick every time Gino goes back to Russia, where he just pops an aspirin and goes about his day, but in a fundamental, vital sort of way, like he needs Gino's steadying presence to calm him while the rest of the world aches. Gino reminds him of hockey, and if he can't play hockey, being around Gino is the next best thing. He takes to sacking out in Gino's bed, careful to not touch him, and lie on the side of the bed without an injured knee, just to rest from keeping up crumbling barriers between them. He'd think it was selfish if Gino didn't welcome him so readily, with a steady rush of affection, and gently ruffle his hair every time he showed up for a nap.
Take away my pain too, to be in your head, he assures Sid,
petting him the way Sid is petting Dixie, who's dozing in between them.
What are you finding in there? Sid asks.
Lots of hockey, Gino says happily. It's like TiVo. You remember every game. I go through best ones.
Happy, fond, Sid thinks of Gino, too sleepy to talk, and then...
Thank you,
because the two of them together like this means everything to him right now. Gino responds with a warm, pinkish wash of feeling that Sid is too tired to pick apart. There's something familiar about the colour of Gino's thoughts, something a little melancholy, but mostly what Sid gets is happy, fond, back, and...
Go to sleep, Sid.
So he does. Gino gets better first, because of course a knee is easier to heal than a head. And he leaves Sid more alone than Sid would like once the season starts up again. Sid's fine with being left alone. He expected it, once Gino got back from Russia, looking fit and glowing and chomping at the bit to go. He's good at being by himself, but lately he finds he just doesn't like it the way he used to. He hates the long, lonely stretches where Gino goes on team trips, and he's left in his own head. Sid wonders how normal people deal with being alone with their own thoughts all the time, with no hope of reprieve. He'd tell Gino, but Gino is on fire without Sid, racking up points like it's easy as breathing. And Sid doesn't want to distract from that, not when the team needs Gino to perform so badly, not when Gino's worked so hard and deserves all the recognition he's finally getting. A lot of the recognition revolves around Neela. He seems to click with Gino as soon as Max left. Like, Gino had a hole in him, and Neela was there to fill it. Sid feels like he blinks in their best friend with in-jokes and the easy camaraderie Sid still struggles to have with Gino sometimes. Like, they're the ones who are bonded.
You're jealous,
Gino asks when Sid brings it up. You were supposed to be my winger, Sid grumbles, even though that's not it at all. But Gino doesn't call bullshit.
Cooney and Duper said you don't think they're good enough, he says instead.
You stole Cooney too, Sid points out, and they don't talk about it again. The truth is, Sid just doesn't like Neela as much as he should. He's hung out with the guy a few times and he's cool, but Sid can't click with him the way he's clicked with new teammates in the past. Maybe it's because Sid's not around as much, or it could be that he's taken Max leaving more to heart than he realised. But Sid doesn't think it's either of those things. The truth is, if it was only Max's space Neela was filling when he hung out and joked with Gino, Sid would welcome him with open arms. But with Sid feeling so removed from the team and Gino welcoming Neela so enthusiastically, it feels less like he's taking Max's spot and more like he's taking something that used to belong to Sid. Is it possible for someone to bond with two people? Sid asks Dr. Whitley. She's one of the myriad of concussion-related appointments he has to make. But unlike all the other specialists, he has actual questions for her lately.
doubts that have begun to swirl around while he lies in his room with the curtains drawn tight for hours on end. Dr. Whitley smiles at him.
Why, have you met someone? She asks.
No, but I think Gino has, Sid thinks. But instead, he shakes his head and then winces.
No, there's a new winger, and he and Gino are getting really close, and I was wondering.
Sydney, Dr. Whitley sighs, looking pitying. Bonding is...
It's a reflexive indication of psychological compatibility. It isn't an instant relationship.
Okay, Sid says warily, unsure where she's going with this.
Have you ever dated? Dr. Whitley asks kindly, and smiles when Sid must visibly bristle.
You're right, that's prying. What I mean is, a bond is a spark. To have something come from that spark, it's like any relationship, it requires hard work from both parties.
Are you saying I don't work hard enough? Sid asks, because he feels like working hard to keep the unsavoury and uncomfortable parts of himself and his concussion out of Gino's head, so Gino isn't burdened with him, is all he does lately.
What I'm saying is that Gino may be getting closer with James Neal, Sid supplies.
With James for a reason, Dr. Whitley says. You've constantly told me that you shut Gino out of your head.
Are you really surprised to get along with someone who lets him in?
Sid opens his mouth, then closes it again. He can't really protest something that's true.
Think about it, Dr. Whitley says.
The thing about Sid's relationship with Gino is it's something he tries not to think about too much. It's an easy, constant friendship, a practical bond that, if Sid doesn't examine it too closely, he's happy with. Gino's his friend and Sid loves him. And Sid makes a point not to figure out exactly how much. Except now that he's concussed and lonely, now that he's been ordered to think about it, it's hard to do anything else. Gino's still around, of course, in Sid's head or in the same locker room or rink, but he isn't there. Not the way Sid wants him to be. Not the way he was when they were playing together. And not the way he could be if they were anything more. But if there's ever been a time where Gino wanted more from Sid than what they have, he's never let Sid know, or been careful to stuff it down where Sid couldn't see. It's hard to do, Sid realises, just from how hard he has to work to tamp down on the fierce rush of love and joy, relief he started feeling every time he sees Gino now. He knows Gino loves him too. He can feel Gino loving him, but it's so muted, and he wants so much less than Sid wants. Maybe they're not Yasmin and Shanahan. Maybe that's some bullshit Sid made up. Some metric he thought they could follow. They're just them. And since bonds don't make people feel certain ways, maybe Sid was always meant to be in love with Gino more than Gino could ever be in love with him. At least Sid has the knowledge from the bond that he is loved, and that love makes him feel and play better when he's allowed to play. He loves Gino quietly and steadily, and since Sid can't play himself, he funnels all that feeling, all that drive and determination into Gino, and Gino blossoms. He's finally the star he should always have been, instead of catering to Sid and how Sid plays. Sid lets the world see Gino and fall in love with him, and for once in his life he takes the back seat. That's what love is, he thinks. That's what Gino deserves. Sid didn't really expect the lockout to happen. No one did. Mario had promised him there wouldn't be one, not if he could help it. And it's a little disconcerting for Sid to remember that there are some things beyond even Mario's capability to solve.
What we do?
Gino asks when Sid calls to tell him.
What do you mean, we? Sid asks. You're playing for Magnitogorsk, right?
Not if you say no, Gino says. We bonded, so you say word, I go there.
You can't do that, Sid says softly, even though he wants to beg Gino to fly over right now. His head is fine, he's fine,
There's no reason to cheat Gino out playing for his hometown because he feels beholden. And Sid has all these feelings growing uncomfortably in his chest.
So I say word, Sid, come play here.
I can't do that, Sid sighs, even though that sounds amazing. He has his responsibilities in New York boardrooms, just as much as Gino has his in Russian ice rinks far, far away. It's like a glimpse into their future, the way they're going to be when hockey is over. Gino might think he has some responsibility to appease Sid and stick around, but at the end of the day, they're meant to be half a world apart, and the bond will mean nothing at all.
Okay,
Gino says softly, like he's disappointed, but he doesn't bring it up again. Sid knows, in theory, that he can be alone in his head. He's never had a problem, after the initial first day of queasiness and migraines, whenever Gino leaves for the summer. But every summer he knows Gino will be coming back. He has a date he can mentally circle that Gino and hockey will come back, and now he has nothing but uncertainty and silence, and it feels like he's going insane. Sid feels heavy all the time, like he's dragging around dead weight with him wherever he goes. He's restless and bored of doing the same summer drills over and over again. He wants to play hockey, and he wants Gino back from Russia so he can go back to not thinking about how terrible it is when Gino's gone, and how much is going to hurt when their separation is for good. The reporters say he's never looked better when they watch him come to practice. But the truth is, he's never felt more like he's using hockey as a crutch to compensate for hollowness inside him. He laughs and jokes because it's what's expected, and is optimistic because he has to be. His head is dead silent. It's the worst noise Sid has ever heard in his life. During the summer, Sid almost never talks to Gino directly. They text and email, but Sid usually goes the entire summer without hearing Gino's voice. Once they're locked out, though, Gino starts calling a few times a week, in between practices, before he goes to sleep.
This feels so weird, he tells Sid,
and it must be before he's going to bed because Sid can hear the faint squeak of bed springs whenever Gino shifts.
Still be in Russia at this time of year, and playing with Gonch. I always wonder where you go.
Yeah, Sid says, fiddling with the jawstring of his hoodie and slumping into the couch. It's a little less weird for me, with everyone around, you know? It's not, really, because no matter how much the team is around Pittsburgh to practice with, Gino not being there is always going to feel like the biggest unfillable hole. But Sid has too much pride to admit that aloud. Gino would never let him live it down.
I guess you're lucky, Gino says. Guess I lucky too.
I mean, Sid draws his knees under him. I just think of it like it's something we're going to have to get used to, you know?
Because lockout, Gino asks.
No, because it's how it's going to be, you know? In a few years, you'll go play in Russia and I'll stay here. There's a long silence on the other end of the line, and Sid has to check his phone to make sure the connection hasn't dropped.
That never happen,
Gino says eventually. Yeah, it will, Sid sighs. Look, no one plays together forever, I get it. You'll be a Penguin for life, and that's great, but...
No, Sid,
Gino says more forcefully. The bed squeaks on the other end. He must have sat up straighter.
That why you keep on closed?
Of course, Sid says, puzzled. I thought you knew.
So stupid.
Gino sounds angry now.
How you think? I never, Sid. I never say that.
You want to go back to Russia?
I want you,
Gino says. Gino.
Love you, Sid.
Gino says gently.
I always love you.
Sid's heart thumps so loudly he swears Gino must be able to hear it through the phone. And for a glorious moment, he believes. He reaches out to feel Gino loving him. And then he remembers that he's alone.
How?
I mean, he half's frustrated. I've never felt
Wouldn't I know? He does trust Gino, but he also trusts himself. And he'd have known if Gino felt what he felt. It would have leaked out at some point, wouldn't it?
I tell you, Gino says gently. Always love. From beginning, maybe. You never notice because it's nothing new.
I want to believe you, Sid says. His fingers are tangled in the drawstring of his hoodie. So tight, the tips are turning bright red.
Then believe.
But how? Sid whines, and Gino laughs, a little humorlessly.
Way everyone else does. You just believe, Sid. Trust.
The way everyone else does things sucks, Sid says grudgingly. And Gino just laughs again, but he doesn't argue. Sid remembers reading once about an experiment where a frog wouldn't notice they were in boiling water if the heat was turned up slowly enough, but they would if the heat turned up suddenly. He understands how that frog felt the second Gino lands in Pittsburgh after the lockout ends, and he can feel Gino's hot surge of
affection, love, Sid, 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 wanted, missed, Sid.
So strong, he has to bite back a gasp. He doesn't think about anything but driving to Gino's as fast as possible. Doesn't remember any of the ride or anything else until he's crashing into Gino's house and they're running to each other and Gino wraps him in his arms.
Sid,
he whispers. He sounds heartbroken.
Oh, Sid.
I didn't know. Sid babbles into Gino's chest. I thought you didn't. It must have been so gradual. I didn't notice. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I want you for so long, Gino says, and a warm flush of silly washes over Sid.
I'm a frog, Sid says. I'm... Never mind, it doesn't matter.
Silly,
Gino says, this time out loud, and kisses him. Gino kissing him feels so different than kissing normally does. Not because he can hear. Gino's listening of
always, always, love, Sid, always.
Or feel the heady red and white starbursts of want spiking through him. But because he's never been kissed the way Gino kisses him. There are lots of ways people have kissed Sid. Needy, desperate, nervous, absent. But never like Sid really mattered. Like they wanted to know him or kiss him forever. With no missed cues or miscommunication. Or maybe they did. And Sid didn't notice, but there's no way to miss that that's how Gino kisses him. To not feel the crashing waves of affection and joy Gino radiates. Gino sighs out a quiet,
Sid,
when they part. And Sid has to kiss him again. He wants so badly. And he knows he's leaking all the things he wants to do to Gino. That he wants Gino to do to him. But Sid can also feel Gino's exhaustion like a physical thing. Heavy and grey, and blanketing everything else.
Let's get you to bed, Sid says, and then,
not like that, when Gino chuckles. You couldn't, even if you wanted to.
But I'd try. Very, very hard.
Gino murmurs low and dirty in Sid's ear, in a way that makes Sid shiver, and then punch Gino's shoulder.
You asshole,
he says. Gino grins, unrepentant.
Yes, he agrees, and gives Sid a quick kiss and almost apology. You stay?
Couldn't make me leave, Sid says. The next day is an off day, and as much as Sid means to leave so Gino can get caught up on his sleep, every time he does, Gino starts thinking,
stay, stay,
and kissing Sid. Sid finds it very hard to say no to that. I meant to let you get caught up on sleep, he says when he pulls away from one of Gino's more convincing arguments for spending the whole day awake in bed, pushing Gino's must hair off his forehead. Gino hums, his hands wandering lower and gripping harder, more possessively, at Sid's ass.
Not tired.
He wants to fuck Sid, and he's not shy about planting tantalizing images in Sid's head.
a few Sid recognises as thought leaking from the night before. Sid would be embarrassed, but Gino's kissing his neck and mentally crooning at him, and he can't be desperately turned on and feel awkward about it at the same time. "You're not always going to get your way like this," Sid sighs, and Gino chuckles smugly, his hands creeping under Sid's shirt. Sid already loves kissing Gino more than almost anything. Loves the way their lips slide against each other and how Gino's thoughts fuzz out to wordless happiness. He likes how warm Gino's palms are when they run along his back and push his shirt off. How warm all of Gino is under him. He's never let anyone just stare at him the way Gino does because it's always been uncomfortable not to know what the other person was thinking about him. But Gino thinks he's beautiful, so Sid can let himself be watched while he strips down to nothing and watch back while Gino slowly loses clothing, revealing the breadth of his shoulders, the sharp jut of his hips, the whipcord strength in his limbs. "Mine," Sid thinks, running his hand up Gino's chest. And Gino simply thinks back, "Yes," before he leans down to kiss Sid and, oh, Sid will never get enough of this, kissing with nothing in between them. Gino's hands are huge on Sid's waist, patient, while Sid touches him everywhere, greedy and skin-hungry, determined to take his time. They thrust against each other, lazily, a gradual rhythm building, picking up speed. One particularly hard thrust makes Gino's cock brush past Sid's balls, like he's trying to fuck him, and Sid lets out a shuddery whine. He wants all of Gino, for Gino to fill him up, until he can't take any more and make him beg anyway. He wants to be so close, out of his mind with it. He must be practically shouting what he wants because Gino groans every time Sid has a new thought and thrusts again.
"Yes," Gino promises. "Yes, until you crazy God, Sid."
"Want you to," Sid thinks, even though he'd never last. It's been too long, and it's already too good just having Gino moving against him.
"Want you, want you, want you. Love you like this," Gino thinks.
And suddenly, Sid can see it too. Can see himself naked and unself-conscious, lips bitten red and his mind blown open. He moans at the image, at how much Gino loves it, and drags Gino down for a breathless, sloppy kiss. Gino ruts against him harder, hard enough that Sid can't bring himself to care at what he looks like, or about much of anything, but the white-hot feeling building in the base of his spine, and spreading out, until he feels lit up by it.
"Gino," he groans, arching up into the next thrust shamelessly. "Please, please." "Yes," Gino says. His voice is rusty and he's shaking, like he's going to come any second. "Touch, Sid."
So Sid wraps his hand around his own cock and jerks once, twice, and then he's coming, dragging Gino with him. It takes longer than usual for Sid to come back to himself, longer to separate which pounding heartbeat is his own, and to even out his breathing. With a sigh, he rolls over and presses his face into Gino's shoulder. "I love you," he whispers. It feels different, bigger, when he says it out loud, to Gino's face, and doesn't just think it.
"Love you too,"
Gino says, and Sid feels an arm come up, to rest heavy around him, keeping him close. "I don't want to mess this up," he says. "This can't mess us up."
"Won't,"
Gino promises, so sure that Sid believes him. Sid's phone alarm goes off earlier than Gino's the next morning, and he rolls out of Gino's bed with a groan and silences it before Gino wakes up. He's completely dead to the world, hand flung out in the warm dip Sid's body left, still jet-lagged and snoring. He's having a hazy dream about being in a sandwich-eating contest. Gino's call is later than Sid's, and he needs the sleep. So Sid kisses Gino's forehead goodbye, makes himself breakfast, sets the coffee to percolate, and leaves a note before he drives back to his house to get into nicer clothes than the jeans and old ratty hoodie he was wearing yesterday, when he was wearing anything at all. Sid can't help but think, when he goes in, that everyone must know something's changed. He feels so different, so much fuller, so much more aware of Gino than he used to be. He feels a small start,
when Gino wakes up. Then an affectionate, quiet, good morning. He does interviews, but in the back of his head, Gino's going from hazy happiness to focus and joy, like a little kid on the first day back from school. Sid keeps smiling at random moments. When Gino finds the note and coffee Sid left, when he pulls on a Penguins t-shirt for the first time in months, and no one comments. Jennifer comes the closest, but PR's her job, which is really just advanced anticipating and noticing things. And she's bonded to her fiancé too. She takes one look at Sid coming to film a quick interview with Penn's TV and gives him a smile. "Glad not to be alone in your head anymore?" she asks, positioning him and his shirt to her liking. "That obvious?" he asks, and she pats his shoulder. "Only because you look how I feel after every long road trip," she says. "But we all miss Gino." Gino, luckily, doesn't come in until after Sid's done with interviews because he can't stop himself from beaming at Gino when he stumbled in the locker room. "You find the coffee I left?" Sid asks in an undertone. When they're skating lazy circles around the ice warming up. "I didn't want to go, but..."
"I know, Sid,"
Gino murmurs, giving him a soft little smile that Sid had never seen before yesterday, and it makes his heart pound a little faster.
"Was good coffee."
"Oh, boy!" Ida shouts loudly from across the ice. "Old bonded couple, back together."
"Poorly make honest woman of you one day,"
Gino shouts back, winking at Sid.
"You ready?"
He holds his fist up in the familiar ritual.
"Hockey what we for," he thinks.
And Sid smiles and bumps fists back, knocking their helmets together. "No," he thinks, "but hockey's what we do." The end. Thank you for listening.